Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. President Barack Obama is back, and we give a very detailed and evidence-based cross-examination of one of the worst presidents in American history. Please consider supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you guys want to win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Hit that subscribe button. Give us a 5-star review. Screenshot it and email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com. An important episode is here, where we challenge President Barack Obama and his sinister worldview. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of cars like Fiat, Kia, Pacifica, XT5, it is impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. All the parts you're ever going to need. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for more important things. That's why you have to check out rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family business. You've probably heard their jingle before. All the parts you'll ever need. Rock Auto, serving auto part customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So go to rockauto.com and tell them our show sent you, Charlie Kirk Show, when they ask, how did you hear about us? So they know that we were the ones that sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. President Barack Obama. I don't say his name that often. I think we're going to be saying it more and more heading into this election. It's interesting. I get a lot of emails from you guys at freedom@charliekirk.com, and we have a lot of 14, 15, and 16-year-olds that listen to this program. And a lot of you did not have a lot of political awareness while President Obama was running the country into the ground. So it's very helpful sometimes to go back and remind people that President Barack Obama is a pathological liar. He rarely said a good thing about the United States of America. He was a vessel for Marxist takeover at every single entry point of the federal government. And President Barack Obama divided America racially and culturally more so than any other president in my lifetime, and probably any other president since Woodrow Wilson. President Barack Obama is remembered with rose-colored glasses by the radical left and the activist media. They act as if he was this incredibly successful president who bridged America together. And then they blame Donald Trump for all of the divisions that President Barack Obama himself actually was the one that made happen. So President Obama was trending on Twitter recently when he spoke at Representative John Lewis's funeral. So let's talk about John Lewis. We haven't yet had a chance to talk about it here on the Charlie Kirk Show. It's very important to distinguish between the accomplishments of John Lewis of the civil rights era and then John Lewis of the Trump era. It's two distinctly different buckets of processing his legacy. Now, mind you, the activist media prohibits what I'm about to say because I'm about to say something that complements what John Lewis did as a young man and then criticizes what he did in his later years and then also adds some context to how he was used by the Democrat Party. Now, the media thinks that you're not allowed to say anything like this whatsoever. And I'm not saying that John Lewis is a bad person. I'm not saying that he was always doing bad things. I'm saying that you have to look at things with a lot more nuance, especially when you look at how John Lewis deceived people in the last couple of years. Let's start with the good stuff. John Lewis heroically stood up to the racist Jim Crow Democrat South. He was beaten and bloodied in the famous march from Selma to Montgomery, which occurred on March 7, 1965, when peaceful marchers were met by Alabama state troopers who attacked them with nightsticks, tear gas, and whips after they refused to turn back. This event led to the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which was signed into law reluctantly by the racist Democrat Lyndon Baines Johnson, passed almost unanimously by the Republicans in the House and the Senate, and reluctantly by Democrats. This was a good thing. Prior to that, blacks attempting to vote often were told by election officials that they had gotten the date, time, or polling place wrong, that they possessed insufficient literacy skills, or they had filled out an application incorrectly. These were racist laws passed by race-obsessed Democrats. The Democrats were obsessed about race back in the 1960s, and the Democrats are still obsessed about race to this day. So while we honor what John Lewis was part of in 1965, we cannot divorce from some of the slanderous things he said about President Donald Trump. Now, what I'm about to talk about right here is considered to be ideological contraband. Not allowed to say this, but I am anyway. John Lewis had called Trump an illegitimate president ahead of his 2017 inauguration. John Lewis was a hero for what he did in the 1960s. He's a fool for saying Donald Trump was an illegitimate president. Here's a clip from John Lewis with George Stephanopoulos in January of 2018 calling Trump a racist. Play tape.
Do you think President Trump is a racist?
I think he is a racist.
Here's another clip of him calling Trump a racist in a House floor speech July of last year. Play tape.
I know racism when I see it. I know racism when I feel it. And at the highest level of government, there's no room for racism.
And again, since John Lewis marched with Dr. Martin Luther King, something that Jesse Jackson did, and he was actually there when Martin Luther King was shot, we can't ignore how Obama shamelessly used his death to advocate for partisanship. Look, here's an uncomfortable truth for you. Funerals in the Trump era are used as nonstop commercial-free lecture campaigns to try to destroy Donald Trump's favorability in the public eye. It's just true. Funerals should be about remembering someone's legacy, the impact they had on the world, and trying to continue to speak truthfully into their family members and give them some peace of how they can live better lives because of how that human being impacted the world. I think that's perfectly fine. However, this funeral for John Lewis was no different than also the funeral for John McCain or George Floyd that lasted a couple days uninterrupted on cable television, where there were many speakers that used their platforms to attack Donald Trump and his current presidency, either outwardly or a little less than on the surface. It might have been a little buried in some of their comments. George H.W. Bush, too, when he passed away, was used as a way to attack Donald Trump. Now, Barack Obama, I've been following President Obama since he was a state senator in the state of Illinois, because that's my home state. I'm originally from the suburbs of Chicago. And so I'm going to say this as delicately as I can. You like that, team? That's good, delicately. President Obama starts to incorporate some urban slang. It's almost like when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the clueless socialist who represents New York, it's like when she spoke in front of black audiences at Al Sharpton's race-baiting National Action Network summit, when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez started to talk in, let's just say, black slang, and that's not my term, that is Candace Owens' term, who called her out for it. Anyway, President Obama, he used a lot of scripture. He constantly quotes scripture. I'm a Bible-believing Christian. I do find it perplexing that President Barack Obama, being the Planned Parenthood sycophant, continually uses scripture. And then President Barack Obama shamefully advocated for vote by mail in this year's presidential election. So check out some of these media headlines that were fawning over former President Barack Obama's speech. The Miami Herald: at Lewis's funeral, Obama calls for renewing the Voting Rights Act. Bloomberg said, at John Lewis's funeral, Obama calls for renewing Voting Rights Act. The Hill: Obama calls filibuster Jim Crow relic, backs new Voting Rights Act bill. Now again, the left, they're phenomenal marketers. Who could be against the Voting Rights Act? Well, the media is painting this, the activist media is painting this, as the civil rights issue of our time. It isn't. Vote by mail might be the single most important issue heading to November, but because the Democrats plan to use it to corrupt the voting process. We've had Tom Fitton on our program previously that has talked about this extensively. And go back in the archives of the Charlie Kirk Show to go listen to Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch talk about this very topic. The media is playing into this. NPR, National Public Radio, just sent out a push notification on Apple News. And we can get deeper into this, but the Republicans on the hearing against big tech, they did such a poor job in some ways, because I would love to know who exactly – I want to know the human being's name of who's in charge of what gets a push notification on Apple News and what doesn't. I want to know who is in charge of this. So here's what NPR – I didn't subscribe to this, but NPR just sends it on my phone on Apple News. More than half of young voters say they don't have the resources or knowledge to vote by mail in November, a new poll finds. Well, how about the young people show up to go vote because they're not at risk to die of the virus? How about that? I mean, what a deceiving headline. Resources to go vote by mail. We have created such soft young people. It is just unbelievable. They're focusing intently on trying to get vote by mail. And it makes a lot of sense because the Democrats, I don't think, can win a fair election right now. The Democrats need to cheat their way to victory. They need to find the right amount of dead voters, harvest the right amount of ballots. I know somebody in the state of Arizona that had multiple ballots sent to their home, multiple, and they tried to return them and there was no way to do it. They didn't fill them out, but they tried to return them. And no one really, the state election commission or whatever, the board county of supervisors, what do they call it in Arizona, was basically like, oh yeah, this happens all the time. Just don't turn them in. Happens all the time is what they said. It is outrageous. It is criminal to our voting process. And the Democrats say, well, we're big proponents of democracy, even though we are a republic, not a democracy. But if they really believe that, wouldn't they want the most secure elections possible? President Barack Obama also called the Senate filibuster rule a Jim Crow relic and said it should be ended to pass legislation that would restore a key provision of the Voting Rights Act. The Senate filibuster is a procedural tactic that requires 60 votes for legislation to proceed. Here's what President Obama said. Once we pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, we should keep on marching. And if this all takes eliminating the filibuster, another Jim Crow relic, in order to secure the God-given rights of every American, then that's what we should do. What? So before I explain the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, let's discuss the filibuster. Getting rid of it is called the, quote, nuclear option. That should say something. Obama is still very upset that the Republican filibusters really stopped much of his radical policy agenda during his presidency. And I don't remember him saying that it was a Jim Crow era relic when he filibustered against Justice Alito's appointment. Barack Obama joined a filibuster to try to block Samuel Alito from joining the United States Supreme Court January 30th, 2006, when he was a senator for the state of Illinois. This is what Vox is saying. Vox is full of incredibly overeducated, high IQ Marxists that hate America. The filibuster is a historical accident that became a tool of white supremacy. So what is their rationale? And there is some truth to this. Look, I think the filibuster is actually necessary to be a deliberative body, which is what the founding fathers wanted the United States Senate to be. They wanted the United States Senate to be a place where it would slow down the process, where the House works in a hurry. The Senate is much more intentional with how they go about legislation. But just labeling the filibuster as racist as they have with everything else is a symptom of a sloppy mind, is what it is. It is a symptom of a sloppy mind and incorrect thinking. So as Vox says, from 1875 until 1957, Congress did not enact a single civil rights bill. even as Jim Crow flourished in the South. Now, this is very deceiving. Vox is kind of correct about how the filibuster was used as a way to block civil rights legislation, but why are they wrong here? They're wrong because women's suffrage passed between 1875 and 1957. So now, according to Vox, I guess women's right to vote isn't a civil rights issue. Either that or they just are only talking about racial civil rights issues. So Vox swings and misses here on their headline. And again, I'm actually giving them a little bit more rope because there was a discussion amongst the American founders of whether it should be a pluralistic body, which just means you have to have more votes than the other person, or whether it should be a supermajority body, 60, 65 votes. Thomas Jefferson argued that the United States Senate should be a majoritarian body. Now, mind you, Obama and the Democrats are setting the table for after that they think they are going to win in November. This is all plainly political. They are planting the seeds now, so if they win the Senate, this won't be a surprise anymore. So look, this entire focus on trying to get rid of the filibuster is incredibly political. I am going to say here, though, that the Republicans don't have the best case here. They don't. The Republicans do not have a great case as to why they shouldn't abolish the filibuster now and just start passing common sense legislation. You might say, Charlie, what are you talking about? Look, one of the most important things the United States Senate can do and should do is confirm justices to the United States Supreme Court. Mitch McConnell made the decision to confirm Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court without a 60-vote threshold. He decided to do it without the filibuster. Now, mind you, the filibuster is typically used as a way to block any amendments to continuing resolutions or to try to have clean bills. I get that. But if the Republicans were willing to follow Harry Reid's precedent, where he actually blew up the filibuster for a couple circuit court judges back in 2014, and then the Republicans continued that tradition, just to be fair, just to be consistent here, and not just to be nakedly partisan, the Republicans do not have the best argument if the Democrats take over the Senate and then they start to use the same tactics that Republicans used to get Kavanaugh and Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. Just to be totally fair about the argument that they're making. President Obama is misrepresenting it. Vox has decided that women's suffrage was not a civil rights issue. Okay. And they're also misrepresenting it. But there's more nuance here than just saying that the Democrats are completely philosophically wrong here. I think they're generally wrong, but there is some merit to their argument. And you don't hear me say that very often. So the Democrats think they're going to win back the House and the Senate and the White House, and that they're going to get rid of the Senate 60-vote rule, effectively getting rid of the filibuster, which has been a protection against the tyranny of the simple majority. Now, mind you, McConnell, as I said, got rid of the filibuster for SCOTUS appointments, but refused to do for legislation or other judicial appointments. Now, maybe we should have. I just think here's what's going to happen. If the Democrats win back the Senate, which I do think is unlikely, but if the Democrats win back the Senate and they get rid of the filibuster, I don't think Republicans have a great argument to complain. I don't. I just think that they have continued this tradition of going down the pathway of just being a majoritarian body, especially when it comes to Supreme Court appointments. And if they cry foul, I don't think that it's actually a great argument because they themselves already used a majoritarian exercise to try and confirm one of the most important parts of a lifelong appointment in our government. So maybe the Republicans should have gone all in is maybe the point. And I could have made the argument that Mitch McConnell should have saw how things were going to go, how Democrats were going to get rid of the filibuster, and they should have used the 51 or 50 with a tie, and the vice president is the tie, vote threshold as a reason to go pass really bold and ambitious legislation, and then they could have probably stayed in power and was more likely to keep the United States Senate. Who is your wireless provider? AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile. What if I told you PureTalk USA uses the exact same network as one of those carriers? Same towers, same exact coverage, but literally costs you half. I know it sounds crazy. When I first heard about PureTalk, I thought, this has got to be too good to be true. We checked it out. Fact check, true. Fact check, true. Pure Talk, true. So Sarah from Abilene, great place. Service is amazing. Love the price. Speed is quick. The reception is perfect. So you just switch, okay? Don't give the money directly to AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile. They're funding BLM. Cut that nonsense out. Why are you not shopping your values? They've politicized everything. Put your money where your worldview is. Average person is saving $400 a year. Remember, fact check true. So why is it so cheaper than AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile? No retail stores, no billion-dollar a year ad campaigns. And by the way, it's run by a U.S. veteran who loves his country, unlike the apparatchiks that run these other companies. That's all I have to say. They all hate America. This company loves America. Their customer service is right here in the U.S. So here's what you do. It's so easy. They send you a card, SIM card, in, out, boom, save money. No loss for you, just a win. But it is a loss for the anti-American telecom companies that want you to suffer. So here's what you do. Unlimited talk, unlimited text, plus 2 gigs of data for just $20 a month. Grab your phone, dial #250, say the keyword Charlie Kirk. It's a special password. Say the keyword Charlie Kirk. That's #250. Say keyword Charlie Kirk. When you do, you'll save 50% off your first month. So what is the John Lewis Voting Rights Act? Before I get into this, I just want to say that Democrats treat black people like they're really stupid. Democrats treat black people as if they have no agency to be able to identify themselves or be able to operate without some sort of Democrat puppet master controlling every micro decision in their life. And so there were two decisions, Shelby versus Holder in 2013 and Abbott versus Perez in 2018, which they say gutted the Supreme Court decisions. First of all, those decisions allowed you to have voter ID in certain states. So Shelby County versus Holder, who was the Attorney General of the United States before Loretta Lynch, Eric Holder ran guns to the Mexican cartels so that Americans could be killed. That was a U.S. Supreme Court ruling regarding the constitutionality of two provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, Section 5, which requires certain states and local governments to obtain federal preclearance before implementing any changes to their voting laws or practices. And Section 4, which contains the coverage formula that determines which jurisdictions are subjected to preclearance based on their histories of discrimination in voting. Abbott versus Perez, in a 5-4 decision written by Justice Samuel Alito, a great Supreme Court justice, God bless him, the court upheld the current redistricting maps as valid districts outside of one district, Texas House District 90 near Fort Worth, which the court found was an impermissible racial gerrymander, remanding the case to lower courts to correct the redistricting to eliminate the racial gerrymandering. So here's something that maybe somebody out there can explain to me. And by the way, if you're a Democrat listening to this program, God bless you. Thank you for listening. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you have any questions or comments, concerns, feedback, or constructive criticism, you can go freedom@charliekirk.com. Maybe a Democrat can explain this to me. There's a whole argument out there that we should give reparations to black people, and those are the descendants of slaves. How are you supposed to prove that you're a descendant of a slave without being able to prove your family's lineage or genealogy? Wouldn't that require some form of identification? If you had to prove your bloodline was a slave family 7 generations ago, and you can get all that paperwork together, wouldn't it be pretty reasonable to say that you could get your identification together to prove who you are today? There's a whole list of things that require an ID: boarding an airplane, renting a movie, being able to buy a firearm, drive a car. Now, people say, well, Charlie, none of those things are rights. You're exactly right. They aren't rights. That's an even more important reason to require one vote, one person, and make sure the person actually voting is who you say you are. James O'Keefe from Project Veritas, a couple years ago when Eric Holder was the Attorney General of the United States, I think he got in trouble for this one, but he went to Eric Holder's voting location. And in that particular state, they do not require an ID to prove who you are to be able to vote. So he says, I'm Eric Holder. And they gave him a ballot. Now, James didn't end up voting because that would have been a federal crime. He filmed the whole thing. He ended up going away, but he was just showing that you can actually get the ballot by pretending to be someone who you really aren't. You know, in Illinois, it's really interesting. The state I'm from in Illinois, where you vote early and vote often. And I don't, but the Democrats do. And even the dead people get a vote. I suppose dead people voting rights. I guess that should be a new Democrat political campaign. It's really a puzzling thing. You walk up to go vote and you have your ID ready because it's just you feel it's so important I mean, you think to yourself, I go to TSA, I go to get a prescription at the local pharmacy, I'm going to have to show who I am. So you go and you show your ID, and the person, when you go vote in Illinois, of where I do not vote anymore, I now vote in Florida. When you go and show up and vote, they say, we don't need the ID. Now, in Illinois, they do make you sign, and your signature has to correlate with the signature that you used to register. However, the signature is literally right in front of you, so you could just copy it right next to it. It's just literally, can you copy this? So it's just ripe for voter fraud. And so I think it's incredibly insulting to black people when you say voter ID is racist. I think it's insulting for all people. It just is. If voting is so important, as the Democrats say that it is, then wouldn't it be important enough to go find some form of identification for yourself? And show me one person who is not able to identify themselves in the modern era today. I have no tolerance at all whatsoever for this argument. So Obama also endorsed other Democrat reforms, including an end to partisan gerrymandering, extending statehood to Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, and making Election Day a national holiday. Now, why is Barack Obama talking about all these things? Remember, the left is obsessed with power. We as conservatives, we as Christians, we as decent and reasonable people, and you might not be any of those things, but thank you for listening. We are – the thing that drives us is not power. It is the liberty of human beings and decent and stable and peaceable lives, whereas the left, they want power. Well, what would granting statehood to D.C., Puerto Rico, and making election a national holiday do? Well, for one, if D.C. was a state, that would be two more United States senators. So they'd have 102 senators. Puerto Rico, 104 senators, and Election Day, a national holiday. Even though we have voting month, where you have early voting all over battleground states, and where I grew up and states that I've visited, they have voting booths that are so abundant that are around every single corner starting in early October, not to mention you could vote absentee, vote by mail. Not a big fan of it. Some people have to do it. That's fine. Everything that President Barack Hussein Obama was arguing for was trying to make it easier for Democrats to be able to win national elections. That's it. That's the key. And so Barack Obama also went after Donald Trump, incredibly unfairly, by the way. He said this: there are those in power doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws. Even undermining the Postal Service in an election is going to be dependent on mail-in ballots. Now, look, President Barack Hussein Obama, he's referencing that Trump has opposed moves in Congress to help the financially struggling U.S. Postal Service handle the sharp uptick in mail voting. He's opposing this because the Democrats have proven to misuse things like ballot harvesting and poorly maintained voter rolls to win elections. For Obama to compare the Voting Rights Act of 1965 with opposing nationwide vote by mail is a disgusting, repulsive, and shameful lie. He is using John Lewis's civil rights legacy and marches of Martin Luther King Jr. to advance a purely partisan aim and a corrupt one. And I can guarantee you that if Donald Trump was so openly partisan during a eulogy to a civil rights icon, or any eulogy for that matter, the headlines I would be reading would be a lot different than what I said earlier. So look what else Barack Obama said. Quote, George Wallace may be gone, but we can witness our federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators. So first of all, George Wallace was a Democrat. George Wallace was a Dixiecrat Democrat who actually ran for the presidency unsuccessfully. And his most famous quote was, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. Sounds like the Democrats today, actually. Democrats want black segregation in college campuses, or they want black-only math classes. Democrats want segregation of black people to have separate but better treatment. I guess that spirit of the Democrat Party hasn't lost them. It is so incredibly Orwellian. We've talked about that a lot. We've talked about how Orwellian this was. And we talked about before our book of the week last week from our friends at thinker.org, thinkr.org/Charlie, was 1984 by Orwell. Our friends at thinker.org/Charlie, they actually have a really good summary on George Orwell's 1984, and we talk about what Orwellian thinking is, and we're actually going to have our book of the week coming up in just a couple of seconds here. But, I mean, to say that these are peaceful demonstrators and even slightly alluding that the looting, you like that play on words, slightly alluding that the looting and the arson in Portland and Seattle is something close to Selma and Montgomery, Alabama, it's not just a lie, it is the opposite of the truth. Tell that to Patrick Underwood or David Dorn. Or how about, I saw this unbelievably horrifying video this weekend. And again, we are a podcast, mostly audio program. I know we have some people listening and watching on YouTube. Hi, how are you? God bless you. It's so hard to articulate this video I saw this weekend. It was this young woman, mother, who had a baby in her arms, and she was hanging out with two of her friends, black woman, right outside the street. And I'm going to try to recreate the video the best I can. And she's right on the side of the street, and it's a very evident that this video was taken from either a Nest cam or a surveillance footage or whatever it might be. And it was a perfect view of the street. And a car is going by very slowly. And right outside the car, shots start getting fired. And they start shooting the mother with the baby still in her arms and the other black people around her. The mother gets shot. She seeks cover. The car continues to go down. The two other black individuals get out of the car and continue to shoot at the mother while she has the baby in her arms. Shoot, 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 shoot. And then she hides behind the car. Baby is untouched, thank goodness. She has to go to the hospital. I don't know if she survived or not. I pray she did. And then the interesting part of the video, again, no one talks about this because the activist media doesn't care about black lives being killed. They don't care. They only care about cops fitting a narrative that isn't true. And the most amazing part about the video, in my opinion, was that the next person that came in didn't even check to see if the woman who got shot was okay. He gets in and gets into the car to go seek revenge for the gang war that was just continuing. He doesn't even care if the woman is shot. Doesn't care about the kid. Just drives on. And eventually, a minute later, someone pulls up and they put her in the car and they go take her to the hospital. And then a grandfather comes, grandfatherly type figure, and takes the baby away. So, of course, Barack Obama doesn't mention any of that. Black on black crime and how black people are much more likely to be killed by a black person by a ridiculous multiple than a white person, let alone a white cop. I mean, being killed by a white cop innocently is such a statistical impossibility, it is hard to even put into words. I saw the College Board today. They came out with this ridiculous thing where, you know, they said, oh, we at College Board, we are so angry, upset about all the racism in our country, and we stand up against black people innocently being killed just by the color of their skin. And it's actually – it's really interesting why the College Board doesn't have any sort of movement whatsoever about we stand against black gangbangers shooting mothers with children in their arms on the side of the street. That would be a nice thing to see. Not happening. Of course not. Because that doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit what they want. And what they want is a complete and total deconstruction of civilized society. And so when Barack Obama dares to say that we are using tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators, it's worse than a lie. It's an untruth. It is a projection, the likes of which it's hard to even articulate how much he is deceiving us. When we have seen what has happened when 150-plus businesses in downtown Minneapolis were burned down to the ground, when we have seen the looting and the arson, when we have seen 57 straight days of terrorism in the streets of Portland, and Barack Obama says that that's peaceful demonstration, it's Orwellian. It's not just a lie. It is the opposite of the truth. So let's just do a refresher course on Barack Obama. He was one of the worst presidents in American history, if not the worst president in the history of our country. He weaponized the government against his enemies. He's a thug. He's a cartel leader that called himself a politician from Chicago, Illinois. Perhaps the most well-known example of the Obama administration abusing its power was the infamous IRS scandal. You might not remember this. You might have slipped your memory. But he weaponized the Internal Revenue Service. It's been proven now in declassified documents and House hearings and so much pressure by House Republicans, and even Paul Ryan, believe it or not, way back when, was a big outspoken critic of what the Internal Revenue Service did, where they went after conservative and Christian nonprofits just because they dissented and disagreed with his worldview. President Barack Obama probably trained very intently under the tutelage of the descendants of Mao's Red Guard. I will come after you if you dare disagree with what I am doing. President Barack Obama was the surveiller-in-chief. According to the ACLU, there was a 64% growth in electronic spying. He, of course, spied on James Rosen in 2010. James Rosen was a Fox News reporter. He spied on him, tracking his movements in and out of the State Department. He spied on President Trump, still hasn't been held accountable for that. He cleared out Gitmo. You remember that beauty where he traded four terrorists, basically the terrorist dream team, the terrorist Avenger squad, sent them overseas. And we got in return Bo Bergdahl, traitor to our country. How about the Obamacare disaster, which destroyed our healthcare system in our country? Higher prices, no transparency, and a total loss of choice. He oversaw the worst economic recovery in American history. He oversaw the beginning of BLM in Ferguson, Missouri, and in Baltimore. And before the most recent pandemic stimulus, when adjusted for inflation, Obama, he borrowed more than any other president that preceded him post-World War II. He attempted to limit religious freedom against the Sisters of the Poor. He pushed abortifacients all throughout society, and he famously evolved on the issue of gay marriage. And not to mention, President Barack Obama got us two of the most radical Supreme Court justices, Elena Kagan and Justice Sotomayor. And I think this is a good time to talk about our book of the week from thinker.org. It's thinkr.org. So one of the reasons I like partnering with Thinker is a lot of you email me. They say, Charlie, what books do I read? How do you read so much? How do you process so much information? Again, that is thinkr.org/Charlie. It's a little bit of a technical URL you have to get right. A lot of you say, hey, Charlie, how do you get the information that you share with us? Where? How do you read so many books? I do read a lot. I spend 3 hours every single night watching lectures, thinking about big ideas. I have voluminous amounts of notebooks. And my team knows I'm always carrying my notebook around with me where I just take notes and I'm just always trying to process information and I kind of look at things to look up later and go down rabbit holes and listen to some of the great lecturers. I process information better that way. But I found Thinker and it's amazing. They said, hey, we want to partner with you on the show and the program. I said, this is perfect because Thinker allows you to digest big ideas and hard to consume books sometimes in 15 or 20 minutes or less. And so one of the books we talked about last week was The Prince by Niccolò Machiavelli. So again, it's thinker.org/Charlie. So we partner with them and we do a book of the week that I summarize thanks to them. And basically you can explore big ideas. They got some great books on there. I got 1984 by George Orwell. I mentioned that earlier. And I want you guys to grow in wisdom. I want you to grow in faith. I want you to grow in liberty. I want you to grow in confidence around the great ideas that, of course, originate from the greatest book ever to exist in the history of the world, the Holy Bible, and also the thinkers that were inspired by that and built out really bold ideas, whether it be from Rene Descartes to Aquinas to Augustine to Hume to Locke. A lot of these big picture ideas can now be consumed very quickly. The phenomenal books on there. Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which, by the way, you can get the consumable version in 9 minutes or less. 9 minutes. Man's Search for Meaning in Viktor Frankl. And so there's some terrific ones. So the one I wanted to share with you today, I think it's a really special one, by Thomas Sowell. If you don't know who Thomas Sowell is, you're missing out. That's all I got to say. Thomas Sowell, black economist, grew up in Harlem, studied under Milton Friedman, the great Milton Friedman. And while he was studying under Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago and the Chicago School of Economics, he became one of the most outspoken critics of collectivist socialist thinking. Thomas Sowell, he just turned 90. He was on Mark Levin. He's phenomenal. He has written prolifically throughout his life. And the fact that thinker.org is able to summarize Thomas Sowell in 13 minutes, they're doing a great job. Honored to partner with them. If you could summarize Thomas Sowell and one of his books in 13 minutes, it's amazing. So the book that I'm choosing that I think fits perfectly into this criticism and this critique of Barack Obama is Discrimination and Disparities. It's a great book. And I read it many years ago. I read it 5 or 6 years ago. And basically, economist Thomas Sowell, this is straight from their website, he argues that single factor explanations of disparities between individuals and groups, like race, for example, fail to take in life's complexity or basic probability into account. Thomas Sowell reviews studies across numerous disciplines to build a case that misunderstanding the causes and acting on half-baked definitions of discrimination have often led to policies that harm the very people those policies were designed to help. What a great summary. So here are some of the big takeaways. Number one, we should not be surprised that outcomes are not randomly or perfectly proportionate. So Thomas Sowell, being a black economist, he's able to basically cross-examine the collectivist Marxist Barack Obama and say, hey, maybe there's other reasons besides racism why the black community might have disparities in income and in wealth. Thomas Sowell was a huge critic and is a huge critic of Barack Obama, I think rightfully so. He also says our internal sense of expected outcomes is off, which creates dissonance with reality. He also said we are not discriminating enough in our definitions of discrimination. Thomas Sowell also said some types of discrimination are ideal but not always possible. Others are useful but not always accurate. Still, others are neither useful nor accurate. It's a really good point he makes next. He says some employers were actually more likely to hire young black males when they were allowed to do background checks. Thomas Sowell, one of the things he talked about is how the policies that were designed to try to help black people actually hurt black people. Minimum wage laws, affirmative action, required hiring practices. Thomas Sowell in this book, and that's as big of a tease as I'll give, and it's thinker.org, but there's no E, so it's thinkr.org/Charlie. You'll be able to get awesome, easy to understand books that you can consume in just a couple minutes. And for you students out there, if you have some assignments for some of them, that might be a pretty easy way for you to be able to consume this information if you might be behind on some of your assignments. But Thomas Sowell, one of the great thinkers of our time, I think he stands as a titan of reason versus the charlatan that is Barack Obama. If Barack Obama read and understood Thomas Sowell, he wouldn't be a leftist. Thomas Sowell grew up in actual abject poverty. I'm not saying Barack Obama didn't. There is a debate over Barack Obama's upbringing. I'm not going to get into that. But Barack Obama did go to Harvard. He did go to the best schools in the country. Fine. Okay, whatever. Thomas Sowell talks about opportunity for all people, for restoring human dignity and human flourishing. He does it so perfectly in this book, Discrimination and Disparities, which is our book of the week, brought to you by thinker.org/Charlie. It's important we remember the legacy of Barack Obama. It's one of division, destruction, disaster, chaos, and disorder. If we elect Vice President, former Vice President Joe Biden, who, interestingly enough, wasn't there at the funeral. Joe Biden stayed in the basement. Maybe Joe Biden and his racist policies that he talked about for decades wouldn't resonate well when you're supposed to honor a civil rights icon. Interesting. It's also important that we remember people in their totality. Remember them for the good they did, like marching in Selma, and the foolish things they did, like calling President Trump a racist. I think it's perfectly fine and understandable to be nuanced and balanced in both of those things. I also think it's really important to remember that Barack Obama is not done. That Barack Obama, the way he was talking at this funeral, you could tell revenge was flowing through that man. He's angry that President Trump canceled the Iran deal, because President Barack Obama, he stays up late at night trying to think how we can get more money to evil Iranians. A top focus of Barack Obama is making sure the Iranian mullahs can have swimming pools of cash. He's very fixated on that. Barack Obama fumes that Israel has their capital recognized as Jerusalem, the holy city of Jerusalem. President Barack Obama is angry that the two Supreme Court justices that followed him was Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. President Barack Obama is infuriated that his fundamental transformation was disrupted by President Trump. Huge takeaway, President Obama isn't done. The only way that you can defeat President Obama, because he's a narcissist, he's a sociopath and pathological leftist. We know this back in 2016, and we also know this in a lot of the ways that we beat Barack Obama legislatively, is you must mock him. President Obama is a wannabe dictator. He would have been perfect marching alongside Che Guevara and Fidel Castro. He gets glamorized in the media. Oh, look, Barack Obama, he's so cool, he's so fashionable. Whatever. President Barack Obama is not done. He wants a fundamental transformation of our country. He wants his wife to become the president of the United States one day. I think in some ways, Joe Biden is a means to an end. I actually think they might remove Joe Biden as president very quickly if he wins. I think Joe Biden is the sacrificial Trojan horse that will be remembered as the Democrat that played team ball so that the radical elements could get back into power. Barack Obama is a failure. I have nothing good to say about him, and that's how I'm going to end this program. Thank you guys for listening. Please get involved with Turning Point USA. Listen to our sister episode. Make sure you listen to one of our best episodes ever, where we talk about the shutdowns, the virus, and much more, and masks. You can go back and you can listen to Nine Doctors Speak Out. Nine Doctors Speak Out. Go to charliekirk.com/support to please help support our program. We've been surging in the charts thanks to you guys, and we are putting out more content than ever before. So please go to charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support. Please chip in some money and become a monthly supporter if you can. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. And for the first 10 people that type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, leave us a 5-star review, and screenshot it and email us at freedom@charliekirk.com. You might win a signed copy of the New York Times bestseller, The MAGA Doctrine. Thank you guys so much for listening. Talk to you soon. God bless.